Hey, it's Bob Fibbs, the Retail Doc. Thanks for joining me on my podcast, Tell Me Something Good About Retail, where I interview some of the best entrepreneurs and retailers and people who deal with retail in a new and exciting podcast format each week. So join me live here, or you can also find out more about me at retaildoc.com. That's RETAILDOC.com. Let's get going. Today I'm talking with Becky Tyer, founder and editor of the Retail Details blog, and she's a contributing editor at Gifts and Decorative Accessories magazine. She's a shop local advocate and specializes in visual merchandising. I know you'll get a lot out of listening to her thoughts.
I got into retail actually right as I was getting ready to go away to college. It was a part-time job. And started with Burdine's, which became Macy's, part of Federated Department Stores. So I started in corporate and started on the sales floor and then moved into corporate and into training. I was a college student and I worked with the juniors department and then trained some of the young associates that would work within that department. Back then they had associates that would go around and approve checks. Remember when people wrote checks?
Oh my goodness. I remember that.
Point of sale systems. And there was a training room upstairs.
Right.
Later on when I went after college, when I went back to work for the same company, believe it or not, in another town after I got married, worked for Burdine's again in Florida in another location as their training manager, had a great big office upstairs and a room where we trained people. And they would come in and learn to use a cash register and what we would now call a point of sale system. About 3 days training, and then it would be like a half day on the floor in whatever department they were training in, and a half day in the classroom.
Yeah. But I mean, it was serious business. You had to like pass that before you could go out, right?
They didn't
say like, here you go.
Absolutely. And then there were separate trainings then for, like I said, those people who would come around to the registers and approve when someone wrote a check or approve returns.
Right.
And that sort of thing. It was a very different world.
Yeah. And back then we had to look up the credit cards in a little book. Remember that? You had to find out if the credit card was good.
Yes.
That was dating myself there. And so you were a training manager for Burdine's.
Yes, it was Burdine's, which part of Federated Department Stores, later became Macy's in Florida, which it is still Macy's at this point.
And then how did you get to be the infamous Becky Tyer with Retail Details?
I went into independent retail and then started working with independent retailers after that. Pretty much, Bob, I've only ever worked in retail, with one exception when I took a 4A side job in politics, which happens to be the only other thing that I'm passionate about other than family and friends, I guess.
Wow. What's been like your biggest challenge, do you think, because you're like me, you had to build a brand, right? I mean, let's face it, unless I charge for it, you're just another guy with an opinion.
Exactly. Yes. It happened rather organically because I just happened to have, a love for independent retail. And mine started more through writing than your route, probably with your speaking, then through visiting stores, mostly to interview store owners for magazine articles. Then I would find people who needed assistance that would then hire me, or maybe their downtown association would hire me. Uh-huh. And I would meet other stores, other store owners through that, and things would grow. And then kind of became, not, I wouldn't say a cult following, but a fairly large following on social media. And then it became,
well, hold on a second, everybody, you should follow Retail Details. I don't know how Becky comes up with like hundreds of pictures a week. I like to think of myself as a pretty social media savvy guy, but my goodness, you always have these amazing displays that you curate from around the world.
I do. People send them to me. I mean, I certainly can't take credit for taking all of them myself. I also just quite frankly find them and repost others and give credit to them, of course.
Yeah, but you have the eye for it. I mean, that's where I'm going, but I think you teach by showing those. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And my tagline is stay display inspired. So the whole idea is to inspire others through sharing others' work and to inspire people to to create beautiful spaces in their stores and present their merchandise beautifully so that they can sell more. And then I travel around a lot through my writing assignments or my speaking engagements so that I'm able to photograph those. And as you know, my husband travels with me and does a lot of the photography as well. So we do what we call retail road trips, and we get a lot of photographs there. And then people send them to me via private message or email every day. I get, you know, a spattering or dozens.
Yeah, nice.
In my email too. So,
You know, to that point, one of my pet peeves with independent retailers is clutter. I don't know why it's acceptable to walk into smaller stores and it just looks junky. Do you have any tips of somebody? I mean, I think you would share that with me. Yes, or
absolutely. And I have one tip where I try to help them realize that they have clutter. And one way that I address it with them, and it's one way that I try not to hurt their feelings, is to help them to get it on Instagram. And I say, when you're looking on Instagram, no one wants to see this much big. Mm. So we want to find a pocket of your store that is Instagrammable. And then you want to make enough of these pockets in your store. So we're going to find something in the store that we can find here, then we can make a beautiful little Instagrammable pocket. And then I want enough of your store to look like that pocket.
I love that idea. That's a great way to do it. Retailers end up with so much clutter. Is it because we don't know our numbers? Is it because we just like buying what we like? What do you think?
Part of it is that they have purchased too much, and part of it is that they don't know how to merchandise it. Because it's not always, the clutter is not always from having too much. Sometimes it's just arranged incorrectly. Or having the wrong fixtures. You know, sometimes it's a visual merchandising problem, and sometimes it's an over-purchasing problem. So it's, you know, and sometimes it's both.
Well, you mentioned something when we were talking on my live stream a few months ago about, you know, the dangers of buying what you like.
Right. Yes. And when I go into stores, you know, whether it's on a paid gig or whether I'm just visiting, let's just say that I'm just visiting a store.
Okay.
And they want a bit of advice, which I have no problem giving. And they go, oh, you know, you're a retail designer or whatever. And maybe they think that I'm going to present as though an interior designer would come in and say, your store should tell the story of who you are and be a collection of what you love. And this is what they want me to say, right?
Right.
I think we've had this discussion. And no, your store may tell a story of who you are or represent the store owner to a certain extent, but that store needs to be a collection of what your customers want to buy and what you can present to make a living with a profit margin.
Which means that you better know that customer, what she needs in her life.
Exactly.
Not what you bought because it was cute and you liked the rep when you were traveling to the Javits Center or Vegas one time.
Absolutely. And the collection needs to be what your customers are going to purchase. And hopefully the retailers that are being successful these days are putting enough effort into listening to their customers and knowing their customers and doing their research. And that's not to say that they're not getting valid information from good sales reps, because there are,
sure, you know,
there are some that have that information.
Well, and I think merchandising has changed. It certainly seems, particularly in apparel, that, you know, it used to be fold everything neat and tidy and look like it's somebody's closet. And I think nowadays you want to show the jeans display is a little messed up or hanging on a hook, or the blouses are not all perfectly done because it comes off sterile. Would you agree with that? Or
absolutely. Yeah, I think, and that's one of those things that just kind of runs in trends sometimes too, depending on whose look you're going for. If the anthropology look is what's in style versus the Gap look, or, you know, whatever the latest trend there is.
The Gap's look is what's on sale for 40% off again this weekend only. Don't come by next weekend when it's also 40% off, right?
Yeah, I guess
That's their strategy. That's me. See, that's where you're different. See, you're empowering to everybody. I'm a little bit more blunt. So, Becky, I think it makes a good team.
That's okay. You know, we would make a wonderful team.
Yeah. Bob. Yeah. What do you think the best advice you've ever received has been?
The best advice. I've ever received. To be authentic.
I think that's great. I think that's something that as a writer for me, I think I was just like most writers, and you somehow are writing for that third grade teacher that you're doing all of these things, and it comes off false, and people don't really want to follow it. And I think retail is that same way. And certainly in your writing, I think that you've have you had a struggle with when you start out with being authentic, or do you think retailers have a trouble with that, or?
I think, quite honestly, it's much easier at the age I'm at now than it was when I was 30. And when I was 30 and everything was either building my resume or juggling a young family, or, there was so much else going on that I almost feel hypocritical in saying it. Oh, be authentic. Maybe it's easier just because I'm at an age where.
You don't care.
maybe.
I think there's something to be truth to that, but that authenticity, I think, is something that, particularly in retail, it seems like retail is moving from the big box to the boutique, and the boutique is the place that people are winning and losing customers, because with a very curated product line, a very curated story, it's easy for I think for shoppers to get it and either say that's me or it's not, just like Gwyneth Paltrow and Goop or Reese Witherspoon and
Draper James in
there you go.
Nashville.
If you can get it quickly and you say that's me, then I think you run into that rarefied space where Vera Bradley lived for 20 years, right? Which was very exclusive. It was a very tight organization. It was very hard to find, but when you found it, you wanted everything.
Right.
And I think that's what most retailers were trying to do. But I think when we try to be everything to everybody, we get in trouble. Have you
Right.
found that?
Yes, and you know what I'm finding in this discussion, the independents are looking for this, and very specifically, I would say in 2018, this conversation has come up quite a bit with independents, even that have only a single store, that are looking to this whole private label and this branding at the smaller level, and wanting to have their own brand in their store, or very specific things in their store that are not located, that are not available at any of their competition. And by competition, I mean down the street or in their same town or online, at all of their competition. For instance, Whitney from
Oh,
Collage in
sure.
Pennsylvania that you had on your podcast a few months ago, I mean, a few weeks ago, excuse me. She works with a local pottery studio or ceramic studio in her town to produce something that says York, Pennsylvania, with a hashtag first cap or first capital, because York was the first capital. And that's something that is only available in her store. So she has curated, which I'm not always thrilled with that word, but in her case,
Right.
it is truly curated for her store. She has created a collaboration with a local maker. That item is only available in her store. And because she's able to find someone who can make that at a price point that she's able to negotiate
Yeah.
and have something unique in her store. And one thing that I'm helping retailers to realize that they can find these things, find these makers that can produce these items. And I'm not sure that the vendors are getting this information out there. That this is available, because I think the retailers are afraid that the minimums are too high, and or that the margins aren't there, that they don't realize that there are actually some fairly major candle companies and stationery companies and chocolate companies that you can have your candy bar with your
Yeah.
it may be your logo or your store name or your tagline or your town sign companies, welcome to the Catskills or wherever. It's a big trend right now with this whole location-based thing, whether
Very
it's
much
for
so.
upscale souvenirs and for local pride,
Yes.
that people are buying these things. This is a way that local retailers are able to distinguish themselves from competitors and actually have a competitive edge.
A great
So
point.
do
I think.
encourage them to collaborate with local makers or national companies. Find some margins that work and have things that are different.
Yes, that is the key. And this is different than private label. Like, I'm doing this to be cheaper. Like, I want to go to a manufacturer and just do the same thing, private label, and be cheaper. That's not what we're talking about, because still, the days aren't very far from now, Becky, where you'll be able to take a picture of something and, Amazon or Google or whoever is going to analyze it and be able to say, here it is. And
Absolutely.
that idea that private label also gives you more margins, because that's where I think we're seeing stores struggle with the idea that, 80% of the merchandise with you is with your competitor down the street. And I always, on my Facebook Live videos on Thursday mornings, invariably every other month, somebody will say, what do I do with my, I built this brand with my sales rep, but now it's available across the street for less. And what should I do? And there's always that temptation to say, well, pull the brand and screw them. But, sometimes that cuts your nose off to spite your face. What would you tell someone like that?
I would see if the brands or find other brands. I would find brands that you can put your own label on.
And so you would say, if that's the case, then if someone's beating you on price, then you really need to look at that partnership, because a good brand, I would think, wouldn't see that, would see that and say, okay, well, we don't want to do that with you, so we won't sell the exact same items across the street. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay, good.
But there are, though, I also encourage them to just find other brands.
Yeah, good, good. And I think we're all moving to this. We're moving back, at least in the States, to more of a pilgrim's look at commerce, where the individual storekeeper just needs to have that one store in the location, and that's the one store they want. They don't have to be the next Starbucks or their coffee house. They don't have to grow the brand and suddenly become like Urban Outfitters. They can just be this one brand in downtown LA, and that's who they are, and they know it, and they execute it brilliantly, and they do a great job, and that's it. And I think that is going to be the way forward, that you don't have to have all these outside pressures and try to be in multiple regions where you have no business knowing who your customer is. Someone else knows better.
In most cases, what we're hearing at the independent retail level is that people want to interact with the owner of the store. And the owner of the store can, in most cases, well, in all cases, only be in one store at a time.
Great
So
point.
this multiple store concept changes everything. It's
Yeah.
not to say that there aren't successful, there's many successful
Sure.
multiple stores. But if you're going to have one store or you're going to have three or more, you're going to run them completely differently then. It's a completely different animal.
Very true. I always say that second store is the march is the key. I don't care if you can execute one, but to have the systems in place where you are not the brand is really hard, because to your point, most people do know the owner, and they feel like they had a stake in getting you going, and they feel kind of neglected when they don't see you, or at least feel that presence. So I certainly I think that makes an excellent point. What's your concept of customer service, and what would it take for it to be excellent for you in a retail store?
You need to be approached immediately. We could argue for hours what that approach is.
Mine is right, but anyway, go ahead.
Yours is right.
There you
But
go.
there are many theories out there.
Yes.
And yes, and we've all stood up in front of groups
Right.
or sat in audiences and heard many, many variations and walked in stores and heard many variations. So yes, but be approached and then product knowledge and have the stories told.
What does that mean, have the stories told?
Have the stories of the products told. I want to know why did you buy this? If you're, as a store owner or the buyer, I want to know why is this product in the store? What does it do? Why do I need it? Why does that cost this much? Why does it go with this? Why is it sitting on this table with these other products? And who's it for? And why should I buy it? And why do I need more than one of them? And sell it to me.
Those are excellent points, and I hope everyone just plays that back, because that's the mark for me, that you can answer those questions, particularly about why is it here, and why do I need one of them, or why do I need more than one of them. And all of those points, when you buy something, you need to know that. And if you're in a larger store and you're listening to this and you're a sales associate, you need to know those answers, not because someone is going to quiz you on it and you get a raise of 10 cents. That's not it. But when you know all of that, suddenly it's your store. That's the way I always like to think of it when I was selling cowboy clothes and some other things. It's my store. And that gave me great pride to be able to share that. I think that too many retailers assume that employees will just get it and they don't. Would you agree?
Absolutely. But it's not just the customer service of the verbal and the sales associates too, the visual merchandising of it. Some of what I just said has to be conveyed visually and not just verbally.
Well, that's why you're brilliant, because exactly, it's all the senses. My personal thing with gift stores is, why did everybody think that having all of the candles burning that were scents was smart merchandising? Because it gives me a headache and I can't smell one of them. And I just walk out like, wow, that you blew that. So, you know, be careful what you're, again, what are you trying to get across, right? If you're going to have a pumpkin spice candle for the holidays, is that because a lot of people, once they smell it, buy it? Or is it just because you like it? Because it could very easily be a turnoff, or vice versa. It's such a great smell that everybody who smells it seems to buy one, or we can upsell it and that's it. And that's our brand. But you have to know that about your customer. And what would you tell a friend looking to go into retail? She's been a teacher all of her life, and her daughter have this idea. They're going to open a pet salon or a pet store, because they've always wanted to work with, they love pets so much. What would you tell your friend about
going
into retail?
Well, the red flag went up when you said her and her daughter, because we're going to have that discussion first. And we're going to be very frank about how family businesses work. I'm not in business with a family member, so I can say this. Just a very frank discussion and talk about some instances.
No, you can't stop there. What does a frank discussion include?
About they need to look very frankly at their family and see if that can work, because it's very difficult. And
I would agree. When things go wrong, Would you be willing to fire your mother?
Exactly. And it happens. And I would be more than happy to connect them. I do a lot of connecting people, Bob.
Yeah, I noticed
that. I'd be more than happy to connect them with people that I can connect them with that have had good experiences and bad. And that's, I'll just connect you and you just chat away and make your decision based on some hard data here that, I mean, not hard data, but some personal experiences. Okay. And then, okay, fine. Then you make your decision and you move forward or not. The other advice, once we get past that family issue that you threw there in your little, thought you'd slip that in there, didn't you?
I did.
The next thing I tell anyone if they're talking about opening a store is three words. Retail is lonely. Because they do not realize this until they open a store. So I just try to, and it's very hard to convey to someone how lonely that's going to be. So I do encourage retailers to reach out to each other. And I've noticed, you know, like on your Thursday Facebook Lives that you do, I'm sure that you have retailers on there that comment every week that kind of know each other.
Yes.
Because they've probably networked with each other from that. There's other Facebook groups, you know, private groups and things where people probably know each other.
Right.
And may or may not communicate outside of social media.
I want to bring you back to that lonely idea, because I think that's what leads so many independent retailers to fall into the trap of making your employees your friends.
Yes.
Which is just as bad as going into business with a family member, right? I mean,
right.
They aren't your friends, because you have to be able to fire them and reprimand and hold accountable and goad them and train them and encourage them. And that's very different when you are paying somebody.
Right.
You expect an ROI.
That's true. And yet, on the flip side of that, you do have to have a certain trust level and bring them in. And that's where a very strong business ethic and ethos comes in, where hopefully someone who starts a store has some business training and knows where to draw the line with those trust levels and where to bring in. And I think job descriptions are important, and I always encourage store owners to have job descriptions, even in very small stores, so that their store manager or their even if they don't have, well, I mean, they do have titles, but even if they don't have a huge hierarchy, that everyone has assignments and somewhat of a job description, at least, so that it's defined who is in on what parts.
And what you do and you don't do to work for me. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. Well, we're coming to the end of our time here. I always have to add and asking about the name of my podcast. So tell me something good about retail.
My favorite thing about retail lately, Bob, is what I'm seeing in the collaborations. You know, I alluded to it earlier, that I see retailers reaching out. Like at the trade shows this summer, I think I saw retailers that were as much looking for sourcing for ideas as much as specific products. A little less whining and a little more, I think I can do this.
Good.
Some hopeful feelings. And probably some people that are going to go ahead after Christmas and close up shop because they're not hopeful. And that's okay. And that's, you know, that's okay.
Well, I think there's a third wave of retailers coming in. I think there's some young people nipping at some more established retailers' heels. They know their numbers. They know social media. They might have an online store. They're going to open a brick and mortar store, and they're going to start off at such a higher level of engagement and passion that we're going to keep talking about a retail renaissance, I think, in an awful lot of areas.
Absolutely. And I think they're going to be very engaged in their communities, and I'm really excited about that.
Nice. Well, good. Well, tell me, how do we get in touch? How do we find out about you and Retail Details?
Well, you can always find me on Instagram. This happens to be my favorite platform, at least for now, at Retail Details. And Retail Details blog on Facebook. And retaildetailsblog.com to read my blog. And click on any of those. You can click on the email link and send me an email.
And that brings us to the end of another edition of Tell Me Something Good About Retail. I'm your host, Bob Phibbs, the Retail Doctor. Please share the love and tell your friends to subscribe as I engage retailers to share their tips for growing your retail business. Find out more about me at retaildoc.com. That's RETAILDOC.com. While you're there, you can find a transcript of this podcast. You can send an email to me at bob@retaildoc.com to tell me what you thought of this episode. And or you can leave a comment and share your experience right here as it relates to what we were talking about today. Again, I hope you'll tune in for another episode, and good selling.